Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Ralph Compton's Trail of the Gunfighter series. Narrated by Terrence Aselford. With performances by Danny Gavigan, Yasmin Toison, David Coyne, Elizabeth Jernigan, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Thomas Keegan, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Faith Potts, Lily Beacon, Daniel Stevens, Casey Platt, Karen Novak, Joe Brack, Scott McCormick, Tim Carlin, Drew Kopus, Joseph Thornhill, Jeff Allen, Michael John Casey, Christopher Sheeran, James Lewis, and Mort Shelby. The Dawn of Fury, Part 1. The James River Plantation, near Charlottesville, Virginia, November 15th, 1865.
7 riders coming, sir.
Thank you, Malachi. You'd best hide yourself. You're a free man now, but if they're Yankees and they see you here, there could be trouble.
Malachi left the room, taking refuge in the loft, where he could observe the parlor. Naomi Stone and 16-year-old Rachel peered nervously out a window at the approaching riders.
Well, perhaps they're Confederates and mean us no harm.
Perhaps, Naomi. Perhaps.
Joshua knew better. The men rode good horses, and none of them wore the threadbare gray of the Confederacy. They all carried saddle guns, and beneath their coats, holsters attested to the presence of sidearms. The 7 looked exactly like what Joshua Stone feared they were. Renegades, who had probably fought on neither side, but had taken advantage of the war to pillage and murder. The lead rider, a tall man with a shock of white hair, dismounted.
We need food.
We can't spare any. We have little enough for ourselves.
Joshua tried to close the door, but the stranger was too quick for him.
We'll have a look for ourselves.
The 7 surged into the parlor. One of the men seized Naomi's dress at the throat and ripped it to the waist. The second man threw Rachel to the floor and got a straddle of her. Joshua slammed a right to the jaw of the man who was stripping Naomi. Drawing his pistol, he shot Joshua Stone in the belly. Tears rolled down his cheeks as he saw his wife and daughter stripped, violated, and brutally murdered. Their passion spent, the men looked at one another, shaken by the enormity of their crime.
We best get the hell out of here. Snyder, Dillard, Foster, check out the barn and be sure there's no livestock. Jenks, Tull, Withers, sack the kitchen for anything worth taking.
The old fool wasn't lying. There ain't enough here to fool with.
Well, then take what there is.
The 3 quickly took what little food remained in the house, bounded off the front porch, and joined their mounted comrades. The man with the mane of white hair remained in the house.
Hankins, you riding with us or not?
Somebody's got to think for this outfit. Never leave any evidence behind.
Hankins used the contents of a kerosene lamp to help him set the room on fire. By the time old Malachi recovered from the shock, enough to creep down from the loft, flames had gobbled up the drapes and were biting into the papered walls and the ceiling. The heavy carpet was afire in a dozen places. Malachi couldn't fight the fire, but there was one thing he could do. The Stones had been his family, and although they were dead, there was one last thing he could do for them. He could save their earthly remains from the fire and see that they had a proper burial in the family graveyard. But Malachi was old and tired with the miseries in his back.
Oh, Lord God, give me strength to get him out of here in time.
He took Naomi and Rachel first, gritting his teeth to avoid crying out in their ravaged bodies. When he returned for Joshua, he was startled to find a spark of life remained.
Malachi! Malachi!
The house is burning, sir! I got to get you out!
I'll be dead then. Malachi, Nathan will be coming. Tell him...
Tell him, sir? What?
Remember these men. Tell Nathan to hunt them down and kill them to the last man.
I'll tell him, sir. I'll tell him.
Richmond, Virginia, January 3rd, 1866. Nathan Stone had gone to war with the Confederacy when he had been only 15. Now barely 19, his dark hair was graying at the temples, and his pale blue eyes said that he had seen more than his share of hell. He wore Confederate gray trousers, a faded gray shirt with both elbows out, and no hat. His belly was gaunt, and lacking a coat, he shivered in the cold wind. The Yankees had turned him loose afoot, weaponless, without a scrap of food. He had scrounged a little food, but mostly he had gone hungry. For 3 long years, he'd had no word from home, and his longing to return was somehow tempered with an uneasiness he couldn't explain. No one had escaped the privation and suffering wrought by the war, and he wondered how it had affected his own family. He approached Richmond with the hope that he might find some food, but that hope died when he beheld the devastation of the city. Debris littered the streets, while in stark contrast, the Capitol building stood undamaged. He limped on in worn-out boots, his feet blistered in agony with every step. He had only to follow the James River 85 miles to the point where it swung north toward Charlottesville. There would be his home, or what remained of it. The James River Plantation near Charlottesville, January 12, 1866. Mighty oaks surrounded the Stone home, and leaves littered the ground beneath Nathan Stone's weary feet. Through the barren branches of the oaks, he could see only the standing chimneys of what had been his home. He stood there in shock, his legs trembling with weariness, while that which had been only nameless fear became full-blown reality. There was no point in delaying the inevitable, and he trudged on. By the time Nathan reached the burned-out house, he could see the dog. It looked as gaunt and starved as he felt. The animal glared at him suspiciously, its hackles up.
Malachi!
Mr. Nathan, sir! Is it really you?
What's left of me? I expected... Hell, I don't know what I expected, but not this. Let's sit and you tell me what happened. All of it.
Malachi talked for almost an hour. Nathan Stone sat with his face buried in his hands. He wept as the old man haltingly described the shooting of Nathan's father, the violation and brutal murder of Naomi and Rachel.
I couldn't save the house, sir, but I was able to get the folks out. They're in the family graveyard. I laid them out as fitting and proper as I knew how, and I spoke the word of God, praying that he'd take their souls to rest.
Thank you, Malachi. That helps. I reckon the Yankees took all the livestock during the war?
Everything, sir. The spring house ain't been hurt, nor the barn. Me and old Cotton Blossom sleep there. He catches him a rabbit every now and then. I eat from the garden. Frost killed the rest, but there's still plenty of taters.
God, I could eat them raw.
I fixed a fire pit near the barn. I'll go roast a bunch of them taters.
Nathan walked down the hill to the spring house. It was of stone and had literally been built over a spring. It had provided clear, cold water and a year-round coolness that had preserved their milk, butter, eggs, and meat.
But within its stone walls was a legacy old Joshua Stone had set aside for just such a time as this. And never in young Nathan Stone's life would there be a greater need for it. Nathan found the familiar yard-long piece of hickory beveled at one end. From the springhouse door, he counted the flat stones in the floor until he reached a specific one. Using the beveled piece of hickory, he dug around the edge of the stone until he could get beneath it and raise it. The hole beneath was just large enough for a small canvas bag. Nathan emptied it on the stone floor, and the gold double eagles gleamed dully in the dim light. There were 10 of them. $200. Strong in Nathan's mind were his father's dying words.
Remember these men. Tell Nathan to hunt them down and kill them to the last man.
He'd have done that on his own had it taken the rest of his life. But his father's cry from the grave seared this quest for vengeance on his very soul. He would need a good horse, a saddle, a weapon, ammunition, some decent clothes, and a little money for food. But what of old Malachi? The faithful black man had buried Nathan's family and had suffered great hardship so that he might deliver Joshua Stone's final message to his son. But old age had caught up with Malachi, and he could never ride the trails that Nathan Stone believed lay ahead. But even with his father's plea branded on his heart and mind, he couldn't leave old Malachi to starve. The Yankees had won the war and were boasting they had freed the slave. But for what purpose? To wander a war-ravaged land pursued by the specter of starvation? While Nathan could not and would not leave Malachi behind, he knew the old man would never survive the trail that Nathan Stone must ride. Now, though, he needed rest and food, even if that food were only roasted potatoes. He could smell them as he neared the barn, and his empty belly lurched in anticipation.
Potatoes ain't big, so it don't take long cooking them. They'd be ready directly.
Malachi had a blackened pot 3/4 full of water, and as he dug the egg-sized potatoes out of the ashes, he dropped them into the water.
When they cool some, just wash them off and eat them, skins and all.
The potatoes were bland, and the centers a little raw, but Nathan wolfed down a dozen of them. Malachi buried more in the ashes and stirred up the fire. Cotton Blossom sat on his lean haunches, watching them eat, looking deprived, as only a hound can.
We need meat. Have you tried trapping rabbits?
Oh, no, sir. I ain't seen none. But we got bait. There's cats in the garden.
Despite Malachi's pessimism, Nathan managed to trap 2 rabbits. And on the second day after his return, they had roast rabbit for breakfast. Hungrily, they devoured everything but the bones and the hide.
Sorry, Cotton Blossom. You'll have to catch your own.
You'll be going soon.
No, I'm not leaving you behind.
I can't go, sir. I'm too old and tired. I just stayed alive to tell you what your daddy said. I'll be going home soon.
It was sometime after midnight when Nathan was awakened by the sound.
Malachi?
It had a bone-chilling finality that got Nathan's attention, and he found Cotton Blossom in the next stall where Malachi slept on a bed of hay. It was an eerie scene. The dog stood over Malachi in a protective manner.
Malachi! Malachi!
Malachi was silent. The sound of Nathan's voice had some calming effect on Cotton Blossom, and the hound backed away, allowing Nathan to get close enough to take Malachi's wrist. There was no pulse. Old Malachi had gone home. Nathan dug Malachi's grave next to that of Joshua Stone, laying the old man to rest with remembered words from the Bible. He lingered by the graves, his heart heavy. He could go now, riding a bloody trail that would lead him he knew not where. Cotton Blossom sat beside Malachi's grave as Nathan walked away. Charlottesville was the nearest town, 20 miles to the north.
he headed that way. Nathan turned to find the hound following. They were outcasts, two of a kind, their loneliness drawing them together for the long trail ahead. Charlottesville, Virginia, January 16th, 1866. Nathan spent two miserable days and nights reaching Charlottesville, only to find it as war-ravaged as Richmond had been, and lacking all the things that he needed. One of the few buildings left standing was, or had been, a blacksmith shop. Nathan eased one of the double doors open and stepped inside. The forge was cold, and a bearded old man in patched overalls sat on an empty nail keg. A second man hunkered next to him, and the pair of them eyed Nathan curiously.
Howdy, gents. Would either you be knowing of anybody with a horse or mule for sale?
Mister, we've been through hell, and we've been picked clean as Christmas geese. Them as has a horse or mule ain't selling at no price, even if some high roller come along and had the money.
I can understand that. Thanks.
He stepped out the door and moved on, Cotton Blossom plodding along behind. One thing the man said had struck a note of caution. Each time he inquired about a horse or mule for sale, he was implying he had the money to buy. There were desperate men who would kill for just one of the double eagles in his pocket, and that left him facing a new dilemma. How was he to buy a horse, a mule, a saddle, a weapon, food, or anything, without revealing his gold? He trudged wearily on. He had roasted a few potatoes and had brought them with him, but they were not enough. When he came to a wind-blown oak, he sat down to rest and collect his thoughts. He now knew he must travel beyond the devastation of the war before buying a horse or mule. He could follow the Blue Ridge, crossing into Kentucky somewhere south of Roanoke, but he must have food, whatever the cost. He forced himself to his feet and continued west, the evening sun in his eyes. 3 hours later, sundown left him facing a chill west wind, and he settled down on the lee side of a rocky knoll near a shallow creek. There he ate the last of his roasted potatoes, Cotton Blossom watching hungrily.
Sorry, partner, but you need meat, and so do I. Tomorrow I'll be at the end of my rope if we don't find some decent grub.
With nothing but cold water from the creek to sustain him, Nathan was on his feet at dawn, bound for the mountains that never seemed to come any closer. More and more often, he stopped to rest, leaning against an oak or pine, lest he be unable to get back to his feet. By the time the sun began to slip toward the elusive mountains, he was dizzy with weakness. He sat up, listening.
Cotton Blossom, where there's a dog, there's people. And where there's people, there's grub.
Another day without food would be the finish of him. Somewhere ahead, there was a camp, a cabin, and food, and he must reach it before dark. In his weakened condition, he might stumble off a bluff. Cotton Blossom was now forging ahead. Nathan could smell wood smoke. He could see the shake roof of a barn, and by the time he reached it, Cotton Blossom was headed for the cabin beyond. He was brought up short by a snarling yellow hound who didn't relish the company of another dog.
Ichabod, you or Emmanuel, see what roused up that fool dog. My God, you think Grant and the Union Army was a-coming?
Cotton Blossom was facing up to the other dog, and Nathan waited for Ichabod or Emmanuel to end the standoff. Neither did, and a big woman in a bonnet and homespun dress opened the door and stomped out on the porch.
Come on and hush up now, you mangy beast.
Ma'am, I'm hungry. I have a little money and I can pay.
Emma Meekler never turned away a hungry man. Come on in. You're invited to supper, and you keep the little money you got.
By the time Nathan reached the cabin, Ichabod and Emmanuel had stepped out on the porch. Both were brawny, bearded, over 6 feet, with long, sandy hair. The pair eyed Nathan without friendliness, stepping aside to allow him to enter the cabin.
These are my sons, Ichabod and Emmanuel.
I'm Nathan Stone, and I'm half-starved. I haven't had a decent meal since the war ended.
Which side was you on?
Ichabod, that's not a proper question, and it's none of your business.
Sure as hell is, Ma. Them damn Yankees.
Ichabod, you watch your tongue.
Sorry, Ma.
I was with Lee and spent 6 months in a Yankee prison.
Ichabod and Emmanuel were silent, and Nathan thought Emma was a little uncomfortable. He doubted that either of the men had ever been off the farm.
I'll have supper on the table in a few minutes.
Ichabod and Emmanuel took their seats at the table.
After supper, I'll give you some leavings for your dog.
Thank you. He's about as used up as I am.
Nathan sat down on the bench next to Emma, across from Ichabod and his surly brother. There was fried ham, fried eggs, cornbread, and molasses. At each plate was a mug, and there were two pitchers of water on the table.
Sorry, we have no coffee or milk. Not much variety, but for what there is, we have plenty.
Nathan found himself unable to eat very much. One thing that distracted him was the predatory look in the eyes of Ichabod and Emmanuel. There was little doubt the pair had heard him tell Emma he could pay for his food. And if Nathan Stone were any judge of men, these two were contemplating the money he had and pondering a means of getting their hands on it. It seemed Emma was the only one with an appetite, and there was an enormous amount of cornbread and fried ham left.
You're welcome to sleep in the barn, Mr. Stone. There's hay, and I'll get you a blanket. There's a mess of ham scraps for your dog. But take him with you. That no-account varmint of Ichabod's won't leave him alone.
Nathan said nothing, but when Ichabod's eyes met his, there was a hostility that put Nathan on his guard. When Emma returned, she had a blanket and two cloth-wrapped parcels.
This is for your dog. And this one is leftover ham and cornbread. Being long without food, you couldn't eat much, but you'll be getting hungry during the night.
Nathan took the two packets of food and the blanket and headed for the barn. There, he paused only long enough for Cotton Blossom to wolf down the food, then took the dog with him into the shadow of the lofty pines nearby. Nathan chose a small ridge from which he could observe the cabin and the barn. There, he settled down, wrapping himself in the blanket, and waited. Nearly 2 hours later, as he watched in the starlight, two shadows separated themselves from the cabin and started for the barn. Ichabod and Emmanuel. In Nathan's weakened condition, either of the pair was capable of killing him with his bare hands. Nathan wrapped the blanket around his shoulders and headed west, Cotton Blossom following.
Cotton Blossom, I reckon we'd best spend the rest of the night getting some distance between us and that pair of varmints. Come the morning, I wouldn't put it past them trailing us, at least for a ways.
Nathan was able to travel what he believed was at least 10 miles before a rosy dawn swallowed the darkness of night. The weary pair followed the shallow runoff to a spring that gurgled out from beneath a rock ledge at one end of a narrow valley.
Here's where we hole up and rest a while.
Nathan lay down, having folded the blanket into a pillow, and Cotton Blossom stretched out a few yards away. The sun was noon high when Nathan awoke. Cotton Blossom was about halfway done devouring a rabbit. Taking advantage of the cold spring water, Nathan finished the rest of Emma's ham and cornbread. He must take full advantage of his renewed strength, finding more food before weakness overtook him again. Hereafter, he wouldn't be so quick to reveal that he had money to pay. It was hard times. His being afoot in threadbare clothes was evidence enough of his need. Nathan got to his feet and shook out the blanket.
Bring the rest of that rabbit with you, partner. We don't know how far it is to the next scrub.
Just before sundown, Nathan stopped a while and rested. The night would be cold, with frost likely. Better that he keep moving than sit huddled in his blanket awaiting the dawn. He walked steadily the rest of the night, covering his head with the blanket to protect his ears. Despite his exhaustion, he went on until the sun had time to burn away the chill. He was traveling southwest now, and being at the foot of a mountain range, there was no problem finding water. Springs abounded, and the weary travelers took refuge near one for a day of rest. By early afternoon, they were again on their way, Nathan's belly growling. He'd begun to believe he'd made a bad choice keeping to the lowlands. Settlers who had escaped the ravages of the war were likely deep in the mountains, and in winter, with snow a possibility, he dared not venture there afoot. The first stars were blossoming in a purple sky when Nathan paused. He smelled smoke, and with a slight breeze from the west, he was downwind from it. He moved cautiously on, Cotton Blossom at his heels. Nathan was hoping for a settler's cabin, but those hopes withered and died when he saw the glow of a campfire.
Hello, the camp. I'm friendly and I'm hungry.
Come up to the fire and keep your hands where I can see them.
Nathan obeyed the command. On the opposite side of the fire, a man stepped out of the darkness. He was about Nathan's height, and his mackinaw was unbuttoned, allowing access to a tied-down colt on his right hip.
You got money?
If I did, would I be afoot begging a meal?
I reckon you wouldn't. I got beans and bacon.
I'd ask nothing better.
Skewered on a stick, a rasher of bacon simmered over the fire. But then everything went wrong. Cotton Blossom took a dislike to the stranger.
I don't like dogs. Get that varmint away from me.
Cotton Blossom moved like a striking rattler. His lean neck arched out, and he swallowed the rasher of bacon in a single gulp. The man was quick with a Colt. Before he could fire again, Nathan caught his arm and they fought for the pistol. Nathan lost his grip, and the stranger swung the muzzle of the Colt like a club. Cotton Blossom leaped on the gunman's back. This allowed Nathan to gather his wits and grab for the gun again. Seeing that Nathan had control of the situation, Cotton Blossom backed off. The two men had the Colt between them, fighting for possession of it.
My God.
He had killed a man over a dog, and unintentional as the act had been, he was still shaken to his very soul. Finally, reason took over. While the fight had started over Cotton Blossom, it had ended with a stranger doing his damnedest to kill Nathan Stone, and Nathan had resisted. Whatever the dead man had, he wouldn't be needing, and that included a horse, a saddle, a colt, a warm coat, and food. It was time for some cold-blooded straight thinking. He searched the dead man, finding $110 in gold eagles and a pocket knife. There was much leading Nathan to believe the man might have been a renegade. His clothes and boots were virtually new, and feeling less and less guilty, Nathan took them. The boots were a bit large, with pointed toes and undershot heels, but the coat, clothes, and hat were almost a perfect fit. Nathan dragged the dead man off into the darkness, away from the fire. Only then did Cotton Blossom come near.
Now we'll find this hombre's horse, saddlebags, and grub.
The horse proved to be a big black with a white blaze on his face. The saddle was double-rigged, and the saddlebags proved the biggest treasure of all. There was half a side of bacon, a sack of dried beans, part of a sack of coffee beans, a change of clothes, and 200 rounds of ammunition for the Colt. In the pocket of the extra shirt was an oilskin-wrapped packet of matches. Nathan shared some of the bacon with Cotton Blossom, broiled some for himself, and finished the pot of beans that bubbled on the fire.
We got us an outfit, Cotton Blossom. I'm not proud of the way we got it.
Then Nathan saddled the horse and led the animal well beyond the spring. There they would spend the rest of the night. With the dawn, Nathan had a good look at the black horse. It appeared to be a fine animal. The brand on its left hip was a 44 connected. Badly as he needed a horse, Nathan had misgivings about this one, for it was the kind that would be remembered. The dead man's riding boots and double-rigged saddle suggested he was a Westerner. As the war had drawn to a close, Nathan had heard of renegades from Missouri and Kansas being driven out, forced to flee south to Indian Territory or North Texas. The more he pondered his own situation, the more certain he became that the man he had killed was likely wanted by the law. The seven men that Nathan Stone pursued were headed west, leaving Nathan to ride a vengeance trail on a horse that had belonged to an outlaw. The dead man's enemies would become his own,
and he knew not where he would find them or how many there would be. He built a fire, boiled coffee, and broiled some bacon, which he shared with Cotton Blossom. He then undertook the disagreeable task of burying the dead man. Since he had no tools for digging, he found a deep gully where erosion had undercut the banks, and these he caved in, effectively covering the body. He then mounted the black and rode south. Now that he was mounted, he might reach Roanoke before dark. Nathan found it a joy being in the saddle again after being afoot for so long. The black horse fell easily into a mile-eating gait, and Cotton Blossom loped along behind. In the early afternoon, they reached a wagon road that veered in from the east and continued southwestward. Nathan slowed the horse to a walk. From a ridge, he could see a farmhouse and a barn in the valley below. Warily, he rode on, and when he reached the village he believed to be Roanoke, it was with an alarming suddenness. He rounded a bend in the road and found himself looking down the main street. While the town wasn't large, there was no evidence it had suffered during the war. At one time, most of the frame buildings had been painted, and there were boardwalks along both sides of the street. A mule-drawn wagon clattered toward Nathan, and he nodded to the man on the box. Men stepped out of the various shops as Nathan rode past, watching him. He reined up before a weathered building with a wide porch, above which a crude sign proclaimed, General Store. Nathan half-hitched the reins to the rail, should he have to leave in a hurry. Cotton Blossom sat down near the black horse as Nathan made his way into the store.
He's in the store!
Nathan swept past the startled storekeeper, seeking a back door. He found it and hit the ground running. He reached one corner of the building, only to be spotted by two men who came after him with rifles. He ran to the opposite corner, only to face a third man coming after him with a scattergun. Nathan drew back, pulling his Colt, and as the startled man rounded the corner, Nathan slugged him senseless with the muzzle of the Colt.
My God, he's killed Jake! Shoot the skull!
Nathan was already around the corner, running for his horse. As he rounded the end of the porch nearest his horse, three men burst out the door. One man, in his eagerness, leaped over the hitch rail. A snarling Cotton Blossom ripped out the seat of his trousers. He was soon out of range, riding back the way he had come. He slowed the black, looking back, and there was Cotton Blossom trotting along behind.
Partner, you think fast and act faster. That's what it takes to stay alive. I reckon the varmint that owned this horse was through here. Whatever he done, he got on the bad side of these folks. I don't think they aimed for me to have a trial. Question is, how many other towns has he passed through where we're likely to get this same unsociable treatment?
Nathan circled wide, riding west toward the mountains. He kept to the terrain where tracking would be difficult should anybody be so inclined. When he was sure he was well past the village, he again rode southwest. Another day, and he believed he could ride due west and cross into Kentucky. He and Cotton Blossom made camp beside a creek and finished the bacon. There would be only coffee for breakfast unless he took the time to boil some of the beans. He sat hunched over a small fire, gloomily contemplating his narrow escape. How was he to track down the seven men he sought while in constant danger of being gunned down for the misdeeds of the dead man whose horse he rode? The obvious answer was to dispose of the horse. But how? He had no bill of sale, and a man could be hanged as readily for horse stealing as for murder. He could keep the horse, facing the consequences as they arose, or he could continue his journey afoot. It didn't take him long to make his decision.
Damn it, this horse is mine. The gent that owned him ahead of me owed some shooting debts, and I reckon I'll have to pay him.
He let the fire burn low with just enough coals to keep the coffee hot. He then took the .44 caliber Army Colt and began what would become a ritual. Time after time, he drew the weapon, dry-firing it, getting the feel of it. He would perfect his skill until he could shoot accurately while falling, on his back, belly down, or on his feet. He'd always been as adept with one hand as the other, and he border-shifted the weapon from one hand to the other for almost 2 hours.
Weary, he rolled in his blankets and slept until first light. Having neither the time nor the taste for boiled beans, he made coffee and made do.
Sorry, Cotton Blossom. Maybe we can lay our hands on some grub today without getting shot to doll rags.
Nathan made a decision. He would avoid the towns in southern Virginia and wait until he reached Kentucky before seeking to buy food. There was a chance that the former owner of the Black Horse had ridden in from the south, perhaps from Knoxville. That being the case, Nathan could ride west without fear of the horse being recognized, and without having to shoot his way out of hostile towns in which the dead outlaw had done God knew what. He saddled the Black and rode southwest, keeping to the foothills. There was a cold wind out of the west, and riding it came an ominous mass of gray clouds. 3 hours into the day, the snow began.
Partner, grub or not, we'll have to find us a place to hole up. It's getting colder by the minute, and come dark, it'll be downright uncomfortable.
Nathan rode on, heading west now, and with the snowfall becoming heavier, he almost didn't see the barn. Blowing snow had covered the shake roof and had whitened the log walls. If there was a barn, there should be a cabin, but through the blowing snow, he could see nothing. He lifted a wooden latch and opened the door enough to allow the Black Horse to enter. Cotton Blossom followed, and Nathan closed the door. He waited, allowing his eyes to become accustomed to the gloom, and then went looking for an empty stall for the Black. There were other animals in the barn. Finding an empty stall, he led the Black in, closing the slatted gate behind the animal. Quickly, he found the ladder to the hayloft and found the loft full of hay. His eyes were used to the gloom now, and finding a hay fork, he pitched some hay down into the Black's manger.
I'm up here, partner. Find yourself a soft place and keep watch.
Nathan dug into the soft hay, and being out of the wind, was soon asleep. But not for long.
Whoa, back off, feller. I ain't begrudging you shelter from the storm. And you up there in the loft, make yourself to home. Just one thing, would you fork down some hay so's I can milk this ornery old cow?
I'd be glad to. I'd have asked permission to take shelter in your barn, but it was snowing so hard I had no idea where your house was.
Nathan forked hay into the manger in the cow's stall.
You done the sensible thing. It's likely to snow all night. We ain't had a bad one yet, and we're overdue. I'm thinking it'll be almighty cold by morning. When I'm done milking, you're welcome to come to the house for supper. I'm Isaac Wright. It's just me, my wife Jenny, and our granddaughter Daisy.
I'd be obliged. I'm half starved. I'm armed but friendly, and I'm coming down. I'm Nathan Stone, and that's Cotton Blossom doing the growling.
Come on down, then. I won't be long. My hands are already near froze.
When Wright had finished milking, Nathan followed his host through the swirling snow to the house. Cotton Blossom plodded along behind. Reaching the back porch, the men stomped the snow off their feet and Wright swung the door open.
Jenny, we have company for supper. Nathan Stone and his dog Cotton Blossom.
Well, come on in. Supper's ready. Cotton Blossom can sleep next to the stove, and there's a bed in the loft for Mr. Stone.
Nathan had trouble getting Cotton Blossom into the kitchen, but the food was more than he could resist, and his belly let him on. Nathan breathed a sigh of relief. In the light from a coal oil lamp, he found Isaac and Jenny Wright as kindly a pair as he'd ever laid eyes on. The last of Cotton Blossom's suspicions vanished when Jenny set before him a bountiful bowl of food. Isaac allowed Nathan first use of the washpan and towel, and when both men had taken their places at the table, Jenny began bringing in the food. There was ham, fried chicken, boiled potatoes, cornbread, and brown gravy. Isaac and Nathan sat on a bench on one side of the table, while Jenny sat on a bench on the opposite side.
Daisy, supper!
Oh, go ahead and eat, Mr. Stone. She'll take her own sweet time getting here.
When Daisy took her place beside Jenny and was introduced to Nathan, she said nothing, but her eyes were on him throughout the rest of the meal. When Isaac and Jenny left the table, the girl spoke to Nathan for the first time.
When you leave here, I'm going with you.
Startled as he was by the girl's bold manner, Nathan continued eating, saying nothing. She eyed him boldly, without shame, and he forced himself to look at her. She was attractive enough, but not a day over 15, if he was any judge. As inviting as the bed in the loft sounded, Nathan decided that he didn't want to spend the night in that house. But before he'd finished his supper, Isaac was offering to show him to the loft.
"Reckon you must be pretty well give out, and there ain't nothing to do except sit here and look at us once you've et."
"You fed me and my dog, and that's all I have a right to expect. While I appreciate your generosity, I'd honestly feel better if I slept in the hayloft. I aim to get an early start in the morning."
"That won't bother us. Isaac has to milk the cow, and he'll be up 2 hours before daylight. Besides, I won't have you taking the trail without a decent breakfast and something to eat along the way."
There was no way out of accepting their hospitality, and as Nathan got up from the table, there was something akin to triumph in Daisy's dark eyes. Isaac led the way up the stairs, carrying the lamp. Nathan followed, with Cotton Blossom right behind. When they reached the loft, there was room to stand only where the roof peaked. It wasn't all that warm, but comparing it to the barn, Nathan could appreciate the difference. The bunk was crude and homemade, but there were plenty of blankets.
"Won't be nobody up here but you and your dog. Rest of us will be downstairs. When you're ready, just come on down. I'll be up with a breakfast fire going."
Even with all the blankets and the luxury of a roof over his head, Nathan removed only his boots, his hat, and his gun belt. The colt he placed under his pillow. Cotton Blossom had curled up on the faded old handmade rug that covered the floor. There were no windows and no door. Nathan's bunk faced the open stairs. Tired as he was, he lay awake he knew not how long before he finally slept. Somebody was coming up the stairs. Nathan sat up, drawing the colt from beneath his pillow. When Daisy appeared at the head of the stairs, a lighted candle in her hand, Nathan was struck dumb. The girl was stark naked, and even in the drafty loft, by the light of a flickering candle, she left nothing to the imagination.
"I want to go with you when you leave here, but I don't expect you to take me along for nothing. There's only one way I can pay you, and I'll do it right now if you'll take me with you."
"You don't have to pay me because you're not going with me. Now please, get out of here. I don't want trouble."
"All right then. Take me with you, or else I'll scream. Right now."
"Then scream, damn it. I haven't laid a hand on you, and I don't aim to."
I'll tell the old man that you had your way with me. You think he'll take your word over mine with me standing here naked right in front of you?"
"I think he will."
Isaac had mounted the stairs in his bare feet. He took the candle from Daisy with his left hand, and in his right he held a razor strap by its metal hook. He struck the girl across her bare behind. Daisy sought to escape toward the stairs. The strap lashed her bottom again.
Jenny saw something in her eyes, the way she looked at you during supper. And when you wanted to sleep in the barn, Jenny figured you knew Daisy was up to something. Should have let you stay in the barn like you wanted. All I can say is I'm sorry this happened."
"Nah, forget it, Isaac. No harm's been done."
"She's like her ma. After our son died in the war, she lit out with a renegade, and we ain't seen her since. Daisy's our only grandchild, and we've done our damnedest to do right by her, but there's too much of her mama in her. Tonight, I think we lost her."
There was nothing Nathan could say. Isaac began descending the stairs. Nathan lay awake for a long time, half expecting the wayward girl to return, but he wasn't disturbed. It was well past dawn when he awakened. He pulled on his boots, belted on his colt, and took his hat and descended the stairs. Jenny was at the kitchen table, but there was no sign of Isaac or Daisy.
"Sorry, I'm not a man to lie abed."
"Oh, you needed the sleep. Won't take a minute to hot up your breakfast. Your dog's hungry."
Cotton Blossom had followed Nathan down the stairs and stood there with his head canted toward the big stove with its aroma of fried ham.
"Cotton Blossom's always hungry, but I can't fault him. So am I. These are lean times.
I've cooked enough so's you'll have something to take with you. Isaac is at the barn. I'll bring you your breakfast. And yours too, Cotton Blossom.
When Isaac returned from the barn, he warmed his hands at the stove, then joined Nathan at the table. Jenny brought Isaac a cup of coffee, and he held the hot cup with both hands.
Give your horse a bait of grain. Cold as it is, the snow won't be melting any time soon. Grays may be hard to find.
I'm obliged. I'll be riding west. Can you tell me anything about what might lie ahead?
A day's ride will get you into Kentucky. First town I'm sure of is maybe 325 miles, and that's Bowling Green.
You don't know what's between here and there. I've packed you enough grub for 4 days, so you won't starve.
Ma'am, that's more than I have any right to expect.
Oh, hush, it's no more than we should do for one another. Till you rode in, we ain't seen another human face since...
Since the man showed up that Daisy's ma run off with.
Nathan still hadn't seen Daisy, but he could feel her dark eyes on him, and as much as he hated to leave Isaac and Jenny, he longed to be out of that cabin and on his way. On a peg in the wall hung Jenny's faded apron, and into its pocket Nathan managed to slip a gold double eagle without being observed. The sky was overcast, and there was a cold wind from the north, but the snow had stopped shy of a depth that would have made traveling difficult. Nathan opened the barn door. Old Isaac hadn't spent all his time in the barn milking. Behind Nathan's saddle was a bag of grain for the black horse. After saddling up, Nathan mounted, and with Cotton Blossom loping along behind, the trio again headed west. Bowling Green, Kentucky, February 1st, 1866. The snow melted and the weather became mild. Nathan took advantage of it and, riding warily, reached the little town of Bowling Green the day after he and Cotton Blossom had eaten the last of the food Jenny had prepared. The town seemed sleepy and peaceful, but recalling his near disaster in Roanoke, Nathan took no chances. He rode down the single street, past the mercantile, to the other end of town. If somebody recognized his horse and men came out shooting, he didn't aim to be boxed in. Men on the boardwalk seemed to pay him no particular attention, going on about their business. He rode back along the dirt street to the mercantile and dismounted, taking his time and slip-knotting the reins of his mount to the hitch rail. Nathan made his way into the store, and the man behind the counter nodded to him. Nathan looked around and found the store surprisingly well-stocked. A cedar beam extended from one side of the store to the other, and hanging from it, slightly more than head high, was an array of smoked hams and sides of bacon.
Sorry about that. You want me to take him out?
Nah, he can't get up there. Anything I can get for you in particular?
A ham and a side of bacon, and I can use some ammunition for my Colt if there's any to be had.
Ain't none. But if there's any truth in what I'm hearing, it won't make no difference. The Yanks has drummed up a Reconstruction Act that says that all them that fought against the Union ain't allowed to have guns.
There was no flour or sugar, but Nathan managed to buy a sack of coffee beans. His gold double eagle was accepted without comment, and he was given change. His purchases were secured in a burlap bag that he evenly divided and lashed behind his saddle. Then he mounted and rode west, unmolested, with Cotton Blossom trotting along behind. Having food, Nathan bypassed the other towns and villages. Paying his toll, he crossed the Mississippi on a ferry just south of Sykeston, Missouri. He then followed the river north to St. Louis. St. Louis, Missouri, February 12th, 1866. Nathan reined up near the steamboat landing just as a big sternwheeler was preparing to depart. He rode on along the river, following a winding, rutted street. There were warehouses, cafes, saloons, and bawdy houses. The streets were crowded with bearded mountain men with packs, ex-soldiers, fancy women, dogs, gamblers, hard-eyed men with tied-down guns, and a variety of others who didn't seem to fit into a category. None of them gave Nathan a second look, and He felt all the more certain that the men he was seeking might linger here for a while. Perhaps some of them lived here. Nathan didn't like being too far from his horse, so he sought a hotel with a livery nearby. He finally chose a boarding house. The sign said, rooms by the day, week, or month. Behind the place, across an alley, was a livery. Nathan entered the boarding house, Cotton Blossom at his heels. A tall, thin old man got up from a rocking chair.
I need a room for a few nights. You got anything against my dog?
Not yet. He makes a mess. You cleaned it up or pay to have it done. $1 a night. $5 a week, $20 a month. You pay in advance.
A week, then. If I decide to stay longer, I'll pay well in advance.
First room on the left, at the head of the stairs.
He handed Nathan the key. The room was nothing to get excited about, but it was clean. There was an iron bed with straw tick, clean sheets, a pillow, and a pair of blankets. There was an ancient dresser, and on the wall above it, a cracked mirror held in place with bent nails. There was a blue granite wash basin, a matching water pitcher, and a single chair. A coil of rope lay next to the only window, one end tied to the iron leg of the bed, the fire escape. Nathan placed his saddle in the corner, along with his bedroll.
Make yourself at home, Cotton Blossom. I aim to rest my bones for a bit before I go out and have a look at this town. If this ain't the jumping-off place, it'll do till a better one comes along.
Nathan laid down across the bed and rested for an hour. By then, it was nearly supper time, and he hadn't eaten since the morning of the day before.
Come on, Cotton Blossom, let's find some grub.
He avoided the fancy places, choosing one that had no tablecloths and plain wooden benches instead of chairs. The place was virtually empty, and Nathan chose a table near the counter. Cotton Blossom sat on the floor beside him, and the cook, in his greasy apron, cast a dubious eye at the dog.
We don't generally allow dogs in here.
I reckon you don't generally have dogs that are paying customers, either.
Yeah, that's a fact. Well, what'll he be having?
Oh, he's not particular. Just be sure there's plenty of it. As for me, I'd like some roast beef, fried potatoes and onions, apple pie and coffee.
Cotton Blossom got the trimmings from the beef haunch, and there was plenty.
Yeah, no charge for him. He got the trimmings from that beef haunch, and I'd just throw him out anyway. Never seen a hound in my life that didn't eat like he was 2 hours away from death by starvation.
Being only 3 or 4 blocks from his boarding house, Nathan was afoot. And after he and Cotton Blossom left the cafe, Nathan decided to walk another block or two along the street. A buckboard clattered past, going his way, and a young girl was driving. Half a block ahead, as the buckboard neared an alley, a man stepped out and seized the bridle of the horse. He ripped the reins from the girl's hands and led the horse into the shadows. By the time Nathan reached the alley, the girl's antagonist had dragged her from the buckboard and had his hand over her mouth so she couldn't cry out again.
Let her go.
Well, I reckon not. You drill me and it'll beat through her.
But the girl was resourceful and the odds changed in a heartbeat. She went limp and slipped out of the man's grasp. Nathan seized the girl from the ground and hoisted her onto the buckboard seat. He vaulted to the seat in the driver's position, took the reins, and backed the buckboard out of the rutted street. He trotted the horse as fast as he dared, lest they draw unwanted attention, taking the first side street. Only then did he speak to the girl.
They'll be looking for us. Where can we hide ourselves, the horse and the buckboard?
Drive to my house. There's a barn.
He followed her directions, and they were soon out of town. Although the house and barn seemed secluded, the trip took only minutes. Nathan judged they were no more than 2 or 3 miles from town. Nathan drove the wagon into the barn.
We left the dead man back there, ma'am. While I unhitch the horse and rub him down, maybe you'd better tell me what this is all about. You can start with your name. I'm Nathan Stone.
I'm Molly Tremaine, and that man back there was Frank Larkin. He's a brute, and he's been after me for months. Mama and Daddy took a boat to Memphis, and I drove them into town.
They'd go to Memphis and leave you here alone?
Why not? I'm 21 years old, and I've lived here all my life.
Well, you were screeching pretty fierce when that old brute Frank drug you out of the wagon.
Should I have minded my own business and let him have his way with you?
Of course not. It's time he was taught a lesson. Daddy always liked Frank, and he'd just laugh when I'd tell him about that.
So Frank felt like he had a claim on you?
Yes, damn him. He'd waylay me every chance he got, and...
So I just killed a man who was about to violate you with your daddy's blessing?
He was gonna kill you!
Not until I interrupted his fun. How do I know he hasn't had you before? He was just coming back for seconds.
Oh!
Nathan caught the foot she drove at his crotch and threw her flat on her back. A long skirt swirling over her head.
No man's ever had me. And none ever will. Not until I'm ready. Come on to the house.